Well, hello, ladies and gentlemen. And we'll get the TV feed on for Adam in there. You're back again watching and listening to Baseball Talk on 91.3 FM and on, of course, Whiteman TV, Channel 1 on Friday nights. And we have another great show for you here. We're really excited for. We have Scott Dietrich from Lasting Memories Locker Room, becoming a familiar face on our show.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Back as a guest host, and we have a special guest here, a well-known figure locally in the baseball circles, Ryan Enright. Welcome to the show, Ryan.
Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
And so just to give some quick background there, folks, Ryan played a little bit of college ball in the States and founded the Kincardine Cubs senior baseball team. And also is president of Hanover Minor Ball. So we have a whole lot of baseball to talk about here. First off, just want to clarify here, because sometimes people talk about you as a Kincardine guy, and sometimes they talk about you as a Hanover guy. So what is the deal here?
So yeah, an interesting story. Well, not that interesting to anybody else, I'm sure. But born and raised in Kincardine, and played minor ball there all the way through until we were about 15 years old. And then myself and another player from Kincardine thought that the level of competition and the teams that we might play against and even the teams that we played with might be a little better coming over to Hanover. So we actually were able to get our release from Kincardine and come over to Hanover in, I want to say it was 1994, we came over as 15-year-olds to a very competitive Hanover Hurricanes team, and joined a lot of guys that we knew from playing in, you know, various all-star tournaments and this sort of thing. Some great ball players, and got on a fantastic team that ended up winning a couple of All-Ontario championships over here in Hanover, of course.
And so was that junior level, or was that...
So that was actually midget.
That's midget, okay. Yeah,
and then a juvenile team a couple of years later with the same core group of players. So
sure. Throw out some names there.
Guys that would be local, the guys we know were Adam Ward, Ryan Craig, Aaron Nuds. The Nuds, I think they've moved out of town, but they used to be around. You guys might recognize those names.
Yeah.
You know, some guys like Jason Howells, Devin Neely. That's a hockey name, I'm sure, from the Hockey Talk. You've maybe run into him here and there.
Yep.
Yeah, Scott Woods, a bunch of guys from Chesley. Funny thing is, when you know, one of the few teams when you get a chance to win in All-Ontario, you tend to remember every player you ever played with. So I won't go through the whole list. I could if you want me to.
There's some of the highlights. It's always great, though, for people to hear their name, right?
So yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so nice. And so you live and work here in Hanover now? Or?
I do, yeah. We bought a house in Hanover, geez, it's been almost 10 years now. So, yeah, as far as the Hanover versus Kincardine thing, I'd say it's probably 50-50. I always say I'm from Kincardine, but I'm also from Hanover, right? So,
yeah. Double it up there.
Yeah.
All right, so you came over, you played some minor ball with some really good teams in Hanover, and then somewhere on your baseball journey, you ended up all the way in Blair, Nebraska. How does a guy from Grey Bruce, Ontario, end up in Blair, Nebraska playing baseball?
So, you know, one of the benefits of coming over and playing with a very competitive squad and the team that we played with was, and I always explain this to people, playing on a winning team and playing, you know, with some very good baseball actually gives you a few more opportunities to get noticed in terms of, you know, people that might see you play and people that you run into over the years. So playing on that Hanover Hurricanes team in 94, I got on the radar of a fella who had done some recruiting for some U.S. colleges, and that was where that connection sort of came from. At the time, you know, there really weren't many people going down to the States on baseball scholarships from our area in particular.
No, not at all.
yeah. So even for myself at that time, it wasn't even something on the radar. So when it first came up, it was like,
You have to do it.
Well, that, and I didn't even really quite understand exactly what it was. You know, my parents were pretty excited about it, and I kind of, you know, being a 15 or 16-year-old kid, sort of took things in stride and said, well, we'll see what happens. But with, you know, through that whole process, I was able to get in contact with a huge number of schools down in the States, went down and actually visited quite a few schools as well. And back in those days, we didn't have, well, the internet was sort of, you know, in its beginnings, and we didn't have the opportunity to really send a lot of video or that sort of thing. So it was basically a paper sheet that was given to college coaches, and then if they thought you maybe fit their program, they called you up and said, hey, would you like to come down and visit us? And they run you through an actual tryout and see you swing the bat and throw the ball around a little bit. And then from there, it became a discussion of, okay, well, here's what we're willing to do in terms of scholarships and money that's provided and whatnot. So it was really a really interesting situation. I visited schools everywhere from Michigan down to Florida, and most of them were sort of on the eastern side of the country. Wow. And yeah, it was really interesting. So then I ended up in Blair, Nebraska all of a sudden. And wasn't really too sure where Nebraska was. So it panned out that actually a coach that actually had never seen me live had just gone off of the information they had at hand, maybe what he had heard and some of the profile sheets that they'd sent out came through almost, I want to say, last minute and kind of made an offer that made sense. And away I went.
Wow.
Yeah.
All above your head at the time, eh? At the age?
Yeah, at the age I was, and even looking back, I think when I finished high school, I would have gone on to, Western or Laurier or wherever I might have ended up, and I don't know that I even today would have realized what I missed out on, right? Being there, obviously, it changes your life quite a bit in terms of your outlook on those things. But at the time, it wasn't something that was on a kid from Bruce County's. It wasn't on our radar, right? It wasn't something, especially in terms of baseball. If it were hockey, mm-hmm. maybe so, right? But baseball, yeah. it was something.
Certainly a path that no one from this area had necessarily gone down before. I'm taking it your timelines here. You would have been a bit ahead of Jay Bell and young Ron Pegg's. Older boy there?
Actually, after Jay Bell. Jay Bell was one of the first to go down. Jay's 2 years older, and I am a Kincardine guy. Of course, him and I grew up playing together because I always played up with the older guys for the most part.
Jay Bell's our guest on Baseball Talk next week, too.
Oh, so. Yeah.
So make sure you get all the good stories out now. Leave him standing.
Yeah. He'll put on a show, I bet. Yeah, you'll love having him on. But no, Jay was actually one of the first, but even then, Jay was a pitcher. Left-handed, threw hard, had a devastating curveball. I mean, this guy could play, he could throw the ball. And so, even though he went, it still wasn't something that was on really anybody's radar in terms of, hey, is this something that more and more kids could do? But Jay was a couple years older. He would have been, like I say, the first probably from our area to go down and do it. So, and well-deserved. I think he played at Missouri and had a pretty good career there as well. So
the Tigers there, yeah.
Yeah, it's nice to see some local people be able to do that.
Now, you played, I don't think we've mentioned it yet, but the school you played at was Dana College in Nebraska, and it was an NA1A school. So at the end of, what did you study when you were there?
So I was a finance major down there.
Okay.
Yeah. So there was some school involved.
You actually were a student athlete, so you got your finance degree. And then what were the opportunities or what were the options like for playing some pro ball?
So heading down there, that was the original idea, right? It was really less about, it's great to have an education paid for, that's fantastic. But the understanding or the idea when we went down was that, we were hoping that that exposure would allow me to sort of look at taking that next step into professional baseball. Bad luck happens, right? I ended up actually, even before my first year heading down there in the winter time before I headed down, I actually had an injury to my shoulder that at the time I didn't think was overly serious. But as I got down there, it kind of progressively got worse. And then I had another incident where I dove back into a base and basically completely destroyed my throwing shoulder, which as a shortstop, a catcher, and a pitcher doesn't bode well.
Right? No, that wouldn't.
it was one of those things that was supposed to be sort of or what we were hoping was that it was a stepping stone. And again, simply because you didn't get much exposure here for baseball in terms of being scouted by professional teams, that kind of thing. So that was the route to go down, play, if you ended up playing even a year or 2 years and got noticed and maybe you took the step into professional baseball from that standpoint. But after I had injured my shoulder, I pretty much became a first baseman at that point. I didn't have the arm to play those other positions anymore, but I could still swing the bat fairly well. So at that point, the pro dream sort of took a step aside. We still had our scout days and our tryout camps where the scouts would come out and take a look at us. But even as an infielder, even a first baseman, they put you at deep shortstop and say throw across the diamond, and they want to see about 88 miles an hour plus out of your arm. And I just didn't have that anymore. So, for kids that went down there, Jay and anybody that followed us, that I think for the most part that was the idea. I think when we talk, in terms of the quality of education in Ontario. We have probably one of the best education systems in terms of post-secondary, but for a lot of us that went down, it was really about, you know, let's see if we can make that next step. And you have to be, you know, you have to be good, but you also have to be extremely lucky to get there without injuries or other things catching up with you. So yeah, in the end, you know, I always say this to even kids that ask me now, I had an amazing time and I wouldn't change it for the world. You know, to have an education paid for, you know, by playing a sport is more than I could have asked for. Anything beyond that, if it was professional sports or what have you, would have been just, you know, a cherry on top sort of thing, right? So
yeah, and not a lot of people around here get that opportunity. So yeah, you got to take it and run with it, that's for sure.
Yeah, a bit of a pioneer in that sense. I'm just going to get you to move in a little bit on the mic there. It's not too bad, but just to be sure. All right, so you had your experience down at Dana College, and then when you were back up this way, moved back to the area, you are the founder or co-founder of the Kincardine Cubs senior baseball team. What was the inspiration for founding a senior baseball team?
You know what? Co-founder is the right word. There were myself and a couple of other guys from our area that decided. The inspiration was really just there was no baseball around. Back when I was playing, you know, as midget baseball and juvenile baseball, we had actually played in a senior loop as well. And at that time, you know, you had Kincardine had a team, Port Elgin had a team, Owen Sound had two, Hanover had two or three, including our team. We weren't technically a senior team, but there was plenty of baseball around. And I was surprised when I moved back home that the only thing to play, if you wanted to play anything relatively competitive, was, you know, competitive slow pitch, which I think is sort of an oxymoron, to be honest with you. So, you know, myself and a couple other sort of like-minded guys thought, well, let's try to put a ball team together. It worked out. Similar to what's happening here in Hanover the last couple of years, where they've, you know, the guys have started the senior team, the first year or two, because it's a London league, you know, you're driving on weekends two and a half hours to play in St. Thomas or London or wherever that may look like. It didn't get off to a great start. I mean, we had just enough bodies to make it work, and it worked out that the bodies that we had were also pretty competitive ball players, so we had some success. But like anything else, you had to work your way up to it. And in years probably 2-3, when we started to get a presence going, that's when it really took off for us. But yeah, the inspiration was more so just we wanted to play baseball, right? We just wanted somewhere where we could go and play real, you know, competitive baseball. So
and when you started digging around for talent, what kind of talent level did you dredge up?
You know, surprisingly enough, like I say, the first year that we started, I think even our talent level was probably higher than a lot of teams. I mean, we were a very competitive team right from the get-go, but as we started to get established, the talent really came out of the woodwork. I mean, there are some players in this area that, again, maybe didn't have the opportunity that I did, whether it was luck or just didn't get seen or what have you, but there's some guys that can play the game here. And, you know, a lot of them, again, maybe just didn't realize the opportunity was there. But all of a sudden, when we start the senior team and guys are coming out of the woodwork, and some of them had, you know, maybe experience playing AAA ball down in the city or moved, you know, in Kincardine, a lot of guys come up to the power plant to work. So they moved here from Oshawa or wherever that may look like. And, you know, all of a sudden, when the word got out that, hey, there's a baseball team and these guys start coming out of the woodwork, you start looking around and going, wow, there are some fantastic baseball players here, right? And that was kind of the eye opener. And all of a sudden, when we started having those guys come out and rounding out our squad, it was a pretty impressive team, and it still is. It's still a very good.
You guys, you won a couple of provincial championships.
We did actually, yeah, three in a row. So in senior baseball, the way it works is you kind of start at we started at the C level, which is roughly, you know, towns about the size of ours with a draw the size of ours. For a few years, you know, we tried to win that championship and we could never quite get over the top, and then I believe it would have been 2013, you know, something clicked and it just all came together. And again, I mean, we were always a good ball team, but everything kind of came together, and we went into that C tournament and just it really wasn't much of a tournament, let's put it that way. Most games were mercies and just everything came together at once. So year two, of course, they say, well, you've won the C division, now you got to step up to B, and we did. We stepped up to B, and same thing happened. We were just rolling along, and again, most of the games, even the championship, I think was a mercy. against, I want to say it was Clearwater or somebody to that effect. You know, good ball teams, but I mean, we put a team out there that, you know, not to pat ourselves on the back, but not a lot of teams could compete with. And then, of course, it would have been 2 years ago, we went on and won the A championship as well.
Wow, so the C, B, and A all in consecutive years.
Yeah, 3 years in a row. Nice. So it shows you the kind of team that was...
do you think it, because of the Kincardine area with the draw, do you think that really helped you for compared to other teams? Or
I think so, you know, simply because, you know, we were already drawing some good ball players from the Kincardine area, from Port Elgin and even Goderich going that way. And then all of a sudden you have guys that are coming in to work up at the plant and looking for a place to play, and they've come from good ball programs, maybe in bigger centers, and when you add those guys to the mix, it makes a lot of difference. You know, one of the other advantages I had was coaching minor ball here in Hanover. I had the access to a lot of guys where I could say to them, hey, when you're done playing midget, you know, you're a left-handed pitcher, we could really use you, why don't you come over to Kincardine? And we were able to get quite a few good young players that way that, you know, are still sort of coming up and learning the game from a, you know, I don't want to call it an adult standpoint, but it is a different game than, say, a minor ball. So those guys are now kind of rounding into their prime, you know, at 25 or 26 years old. So, it definitely does help having an area to draw from.
And speaking of Hanover minor ball, so maybe to bring it around to, first of all, are there any big initiatives going on in the Hanover minor ball? Like, are there any big... coaching clinics, or I guess you're into playoffs right now, or
yeah. So most teams are just finishing playoffs. Just to correct you a little bit, I'm not the president of minor.
But you were at one point, right?
No, I never have been. I've only coached in minor baseball.
Coached, okay. Yeah. Apologies, sorry. Yeah.
No,
I must have been crossing wires. Jay Bell is president of
Jay Bell is so, over in Kincardine.
So maybe I got the wires crossed there. Yeah, so no. You've been coaching, okay?
Yeah, that's okay. But no, as far as minor ball in Hanover goes, I mean the enrollments are up. You look at some of my daughter's 8 years old. She's in the rookie ball program, and the numbers are up at pretty much every level. And Scott and I talked about that earlier off air, but I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, when the Blue Jays are playing well, it seems to get on everybody's radar. Everybody gets excited about it. But I also think that 92, 93 was the age when it got popular for people our age, and now we're having kids and they're getting, you know, we're saying to them, hey, baseball's a great sport, get back into it. So, like I say, enrollment's up. Last year, I don't know if you guys knew about the Jays Care Foundation grant that the town got to improve the baseball diamond down at the track and a few of the other smaller diamonds around town. But if you go and look at that baseball diamond at the track now compared to what it looked like last year with no grass on the infield, and now, I mean, it's a thing of beauty. It's beautiful looking.
I remember that ball diamond as a kid, and sometimes there's a few years where the covering on the infield they put down had way too much gravel in there. So when you stole second base, more often than not, you came up with a ripped baseball pants and a pretty good cut because they had a few too many sharp stones in the mix. But it made us a little tougher for it, I guess. So,
Yeah, you probably still have scars.
Yeah. Well, I was saying before on another broadcast, I had great coaches that knew their fundamentals in and out, and they were very calm, and it was Al and Bill Stanoff. But they had a phrase quite often with it, just say, I'll rub some dirt on it. And we would, right? Like, you know, you'd be looking at this big, you know, ripping your pants and, you know, some blood streaming down, and they say, rub some dirt on it. So you would, and off you'd go and enjoy the rest of the afternoon, and it was not a big deal, right? So
yeah, that's a tradition that's carried on. I still say that to, you know, the 6-year-olds that I coach. Hey, rub some dirt on and get back out there. Right away you go.
Yeah. And you did a bit of coaching there, too, with high school. There seems to have been, if I understand, over the last few years, we went from no high school baseball in the area to one team in Kincardine to 4 teams to 8 teams. So there's a bit of a growth in high school baseball around here.
Yeah, there's been a real resurgence. Well, I don't even want to call it a resurgence because I don't know that they've ever had high school ball in our area before. I was asked by the Sacred Heart Catholic High School last year to give them a hand with their baseball program, and all. And as we got into that, all of a sudden, Jay Bell was instrumental over in Kincardine, starting KDSS, Kincardine District, up. Then next thing you know, Walkerton District has a team. I think Flesherton has a team. Owen Sound's got 2 teams. Port Elgin, I believe, is entering a team. So all of a sudden, you know, out of the blue, I think what it took was maybe one person to say, hey, why don't we do this? And once it was there, the interest is absolutely there. I mean, you have to compete with those other high school sports because obviously you know, baseball you would love to play through the summer months, but they're out of school by the time June rolls around. So you're competing against rugby and soccer and some of these other, you know, fall and spring sports. But the interest is there, and a lot of the kids that are playing even fast pitch that haven't had an opportunity to play baseball, now they're in high school and they say, well, hey, there's a baseball team, let's go give that a shot. So it's been it's been really good. People are quite interested, and hopefully it continues that way, right? That's the challenge, is to just maintain that excitement and keep kids.
I think that's awesome. The more opportunities they have to play all of these sports, the better, right?
Yeah, for sure, because I know going in high school, I didn't have that option for baseball, so for that's baseball. Good to see.
Now, thanks for this interview, and Ryan's going to stick around and share some of his insights as we talk some other matters baseball. So he's going to stick around and be back after these commercial break, and I hope you listeners and viewers will be back too. So we're just going to take a quick break.
Baseball Talk is brought to you by Lasting Memories Locker Room, downtown Hanover, where you will find incredible sports memorabilia, art supplies, and custom framing. Check them out online at lastingmemorieslockerroom.com.
Well, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. And yes, we're on Baseball Talk here on 91.3 FM. And you can catch us also on Whiteman Channel 1 on Friday nights at 8 o'clock. So, yeah, it's a great show. We add in some graphics, and then you can see how beautiful Scotty Dietrich here is in person if you tune in that way. And, yeah, we were just talking to Ryan Enright. And for now, to kick things off, I'm going to send it over to Adam in the booth, who you haven't heard from yet today, but he's going to tell you a little bit about our latest Twitter poll.
Yeah, absolutely. So our latest Twitter poll we had, just give me the graphics up here, had to do with who was, other than Justice Smoke, who has been the Blue Jays' best non-pitcher this season? And the viewers actually voted for other, but coming in close behind was Russell Martin at 29%. Just quickly, you were mentioning how people, if they tune in on TV, they get extra special things. Well, when you guys go off to talk about Russell Martin here in a few seconds, there'll be a little bit of a highlight reel running in the background. So if people want to check out some of Russell's highlights from 2016 and what he's done in his previous years, they can watch it on TV. Whiteman TV Channel 1, or sorry, Channel 6 at 8 p.m. So Russell Martin, 29%. I just discount the other, really. That's 38%. Although I do have to admit that I voted for other.
And we also had, how did Bautista and Donaldson do on there for our radio audience?
Absolutely. Sorry. Josh Donaldson was 24% and Bautista was 9%. So not too much of a surprise for me personally with Bautista, because he's had a bit of a slump season compared to last year.
Yeah, and I'll bring Ryan and Scotty in on this. Now, I have to say, this poll we did 2 weeks ago, and I think it would change a little bit since, because Russell Martin's gone on the injury list, and then Donaldson's been on a pretty sweet tear for the last few weeks.
Oh, yeah, he's seen the ball well.
Yeah, so after other than Smoke, who do you think's the best position player for the Jays this year?
Well, I don't know if he's the best, but definitely Ryan Goins deserves a little bit of credit this year. He's really stepped up to plate. Defensively, he's always been there, but his bat's shown. And I can't remember the stats, but in runners in scoring position, I think he leads the team in RBIs, so he'd be up there. I don't know.
Yeah, he was right up there with like some all time with like Carlos Delgado.
Yeah, there was a few there.
With bases loaded. Sorry, not with running position in scoring position, but with the bases loaded.
Yeah, he's matching one of those. But he's been great this season. I don't know, Ryan. I don't know if there's any.
Yeah, you know, I think when I look at it, I was going to go with one of the more favorite names, and that would have been probably Josh Donaldson. I just feel like they're a different team when he's in the lineup and when he's healthy. I think that's what we're seeing right now. He's getting hot, because I think you can tell he's feeling a lot better, right? Earlier in the year, he was dealing with some calf issues and some injury issues, and when he's right, I mean, you know, he can put a team on his shoulders, and I think you really notice that when he's in the lineup. Not to discount Russell Martin. I mean, it's to have a catcher of his caliber back there is fantastic, but Donaldson, I think, is a player that's at another level when he's healthy.
Yeah, for sure.
He's definitely in the zone right now. So as Adam alluded to, we wanted to have a little discussion here then with Russell Martin. Where would you put him all time amongst Canadian baseball players?
Oh boy.
Do you want me to kick some things off with a few of my thoughts and then jump in after that?
Sure.
All right. So if you agree with me, I think we can perhaps agree that at number one, it's infallible that Fergie Jenkins, like, he's the only Hall of Famer. But beyond that, like, let's see here, some of the stats for Fergie. 284 wins, almost meant that, you know, magic 300 plateau. Played 19 years in the big leagues as a pitcher, which is amazing. Let's see, he's one of four pitchers in Major League history ever to have more than 3,000 strikeouts while having less than 1,000 walks. He was the 1971 National League Cy Young winner. And at one point, he had a streak of six seasons in a row with more than 20 wins. So, and you know what? I didn't even realize how tall he was. 6'5". Chatham, Ontario's Fergie Jenkins.
Yeah, I met him last year at the Sports Card Expo. And yeah, he's a...
It's a big man.
He's a big man.
Yeah, according to the website I was looking at, he apparently sometimes would sit in, play in with the Harlem Globetrotters in the off seasons. So just a fantastic all-around athlete. So we all agree Fergie Jenkins, greatest Canadian ball player of all time at this point?
I would think so, yeah.
Yeah, I would too, yeah.
All right. And I'm thinking right now there's a fairly... Well, the interesting part of it is I think Larry Walker, I think, is second right now. But the question is Joey Votto still playing? Is he going to overtake that position from Larry Walker? I don't know. Do you guys agree, Larry Walker number two? Or
Larry Walker's up there for sure. I think when Joey Votto's done playing baseball, I think he will be up there for sure. Yeah. Another one is Justin Morneau, but I don't think he's up in the Larry Walker category in that. But Joey Votto, when he's done baseball, I think he will definitely be right beside Larry Walker, if not better.
Yeah, I think if he keeps doing what he's doing, you know, he's a different kind of ball player as well. I think I saw on the news last night that he's reached base more than or two times or more in the last 20 games, and if he does it again tonight, he'll be the only player in Major League history to ever do it.
To have done that, yeah.
He, you know, his the science behind his game. He is such an intelligent baseball player. I mean, he's taken you know, Ted Williams' book, The Science of Hitting, and pretty much, you know, lives his life by it. And I think if he can stay healthy and play another, you know, whatever, 5-6 years, I mean, by the time he's done, I'm with you. He might, he may even surpass Fergie Jenkins as the kind of player that you start putting in the conversation of who's the best Canadian ever.
Yeah, of all time.
You never know.
At this point in their careers, Votto has, he's played about almost exactly 600 less games than Walker did in his complete career. So they both have a National League MVP to their names. They both five-time All-Stars. Now, Walker did have three batting titles. Seven Gold Gloves for Walker. Votto just has the one at this point. But here's something interesting is a career batting average. They're both 313. They both have the exact... at this point. And then their OBS, which is a metric of their slugging and their on-base percentage, Walker's 965, Votto's 968.
Yeah.
So, yeah, very, very, very similar in some categories. But, of course, Votto's still playing. He's still going. So, be interesting to see how that plays out. And then, yeah, it looked like Morneau was, you know, obviously had the 2006 American League MVP and the 2014 batting title. He's put up some good numbers, but not quite in the conversation, I'd say, with Votto and Morneau. So I was kind of thinking after those four, being Morneau, Votto, Walker, and Jenkins, I was probably going to slide Russell Martin in there, which would put him right around Jason Bay, Matt Stairs territory.
Yeah, you know what, I was going to go off the board and actually mention Tip O'Neill. I don't know if you guys know who Tip O'Neill was. He's actually...
From way back, yeah.
From 1800s, I mean, yeah. late 1800s. If you look at his statistics, now again, it's a different time, but the most valuable Canadian baseball player in Major Leagues every year receives the Tip O'Neill Award. So it actually tells you what kind of ball player he was. But if you go back and look at the statistics that Tip O'Neill put up in the Major Leagues, even though it was the 1800s, it's actually pretty impressive. And I think... you know, I love Larry Walker because I grew up a big fan of Larry Walker. You tend to like the guys that are right in front of you, so it's hard to say, okay, who the heck was Tip O'Neill? But just looking at his stats, really, really a fantastic
some
ball
greatest, yeah. I see here that he was a two-time batting champ in the 1880s, and there's a few other names like that. There's like a Jeff Heath, which I had never heard of before. He was in the 30s and 40s, yeah. And he said he was a top-notch. And then there was a guy called George Selkirk, who had the unenviable job of basically following up Babe Ruth's outfield role with the Red Sox, but they said he was a pretty solid player himself, but World War II got in the way of his career, so who knows how that would have actually played out. And actually, when I was doing some research for this, you know, I was checking out the Terry Pools and the Paul Quantrills and stuff like that, I came across a guy I'd never heard of before that pitched from 1965 to 1980. His name was John Hiller. Pitched almost his entire career for the Tigers, or he might have actually pitched his entire career for the Detroit Tigers. He was a relief pitcher before that was as vaunted as it is now. But in 1973, he had the then major league record of 38 saves in 1973. And in 1974, he won 17 games in relief. And over 15 seasons, he had a career ERA of 2.83. So, yeah, I'd never heard of John Hiller before, but that guy was throwing up some serious numbers, too.
Oh, for sure. I think, you know, back in those days, the save wasn't even a statistic back then, right? It was something you had to go retroactively bring back. And you look at the attention that these closers get nowadays and the money that they get. And, you know, another Canadian, Eric Gagne, you know, setting the saves record. Yeah. A guy like that probably flew right under the radar, because back then, if you were a starting pitcher, you were expected to go all nine innings and never need a reliever, right? So,
yep, true, very true.
Yeah, they didn't have the pitch counts like they do now, for sure.
No, and 38 saves that's almost nothing these days when they're racking up 40, 50.
Yeah. Very likely, though, I'm guessing a lot of those would be like 3-4 inning. Not like the, in, you know, God bless Tom Henke. We all, you know, he was amazing, right? But those guys who came in and did their final three outs and chalked up their save, right? So.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. It's you know, I always laugh at how different of a game it is, because you know, in a lot of people's minds, you brought your best reliever in the middle of an inning when your guy was in trouble, and now it's, well, no, we save our best closer for a clean inning, you know, starting the ninth inning to finish it off. Well, I still kind of agree with the fact that you want your best guy in a situation where the bases are loaded and you need to get a strikeout or a pop out and get out of there without any damage. So. Yeah, baseball's changed, but yeah, that's a name that I don't think too many people would recognize, for sure.
Oh, definitely not.
Yeah, the John Hiller. And speaking of those relief guys, I didn't put him in my obviously the top list of Canadians, but a very, very, very solid one was relief pitcher Paul Quantrill, who for 4 years in a row led the major leagues in games played for pitchers, which that speaks to a lot of durability, which is a great asset for pitchers, right? Yep. And you obviously have to be good enough that they keep throwing you back out there. So, one of those real inning munchers.
Yeah, he ate up a lot of innings for the Jays.
Yeah, they could have used a guy like him this year for sure.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That's right.
Yeah.
Now, a few quick notes talking with the Jays here. Some roster moves they've been making here and there. One of them is, remember Chris Coughlin, who beginning of this year, we were all feeling really optimistic about the season, and he was part of that optimism where he scored that run where he dove right over the catcher, and just it was such a gamer move, and we're like, yeah, we might see some stuff from this guy this season, and kind of disappeared on us, and he's been given his outright release from the Jays. Yeah, what are your thoughts on Chris Coughlin?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's one of those one-hit wonders. There's been a few over the years, but yeah, he looked like he had some promise early on, especially with that that play at home plate. But yeah, it's unfortunate.
Yeah, you know, those guys are in the major leaguers. They're in the major leagues because they're fantastic baseball players. Even the bench guys are pretty amazing in most people's minds. So that particular play was, you know, obviously awesome to see, but I think when you step back and you look at Coughlin's career and you know, the number of teams that he's been on, and it's not to say he's not a good ball player, but he's got a role to play on a lot of teams, and you get to a certain point with the Blue Jays where they just didn't have a spot for him. You know, a guy like Darwin Barney, who's a pretty valuable guy, pretty much eats up Coughlin's spot in some of the moves they've made. You know, there's just not a spot for him. But
they had a lot of guys around the edges, right? So
yeah, to make especially room. A lot of the baseball teams are looking for that utility player that can play multiple positions.
Yeah, he was batting 200 with the Jays this season. He had 15 hits and 75 at bats, one home run, 5 RBIs. I was a little surprised that he has 53 career major league home runs there. So he's been sticking around for a while, anyways.
Yeah.
And Scott, you wanted to talk about another roster move there. The Jays have a new pitcher, Rowley. I missed his debut, so you're gonna have a lot more to say about it than I will.
Oh yeah, he pitched well Well, just running the stats, he threw 75 pitches and only gave up one run, five hits over five and a third inning. 26 years old. I don't know. You never know what you're going to do in your debut to do that. But just running a little bit of research on Rowley, like his double-A ball, he had 10 wins, 3 losses, ERA of 3.49 over 123 innings. Triple-A numbers is 2.53 that's the ERA with 42 innings. I guess in 27 appearances between double-A and triple-A, he's got a 2.29 ERA with... this is what impressed me, 90 strikeouts over 106 innings. So he's definitely a strikeout kind of pitcher. He definitely was a hero to the Jays because they're in need of definitely some starting rotation besides Estrada, which is really shaky right now. But you've got Stroman Happ. I think it was a fresh breath for them. So he did really well for his debut. And actually... something that I did not know until after that they kind of interviewed him, that he's the first graduate from West Point that actually served in the U.S. military from 14 and 15 season. He missed because of active duty. So even that, you don't see that too often kind of thing. That I think that even set him into a little bit of a...
Yeah, elite. Certainly you hear a lot in football about players coming through, obviously, because Air Force and Navy and Army have pretty good football teams, but you don't hear as much about people going through baseball wise. Yeah,
I know he was pretty emotional at the end when they were talking about his family seeing him throw out the first pitch and whatnot. But yeah, I can just imagine the emotions running through and the adrenaline to try and stay focused at the matter at hand. That would be it's good to see that that he got the win. So hopefully he can stay. Stay doing it.
be a nice addition to the Blue Jays. Well, there you go. We're going to take another quick intermission here, and then we'll see you back in just a moment. We're going to talk about the who's hot, who's not, the fantasy corner, and then we have some other great stuff there. We're going to talk about the Palmerston Imperials, and we'll also have Clark Hives. So we'll see you shortly.
Baseball Talk is brought to you by Lasting Memories Locker Room, downtown Hanover, where you will find incredible sports memorabilia, art supplies, and custom framing. Check them out online at lastingmemorieslockerroom.com.
19 minutes left in the show here.
Join us in Hanover this summer. We've got an experience for you. Enjoy live music, harness racing and theater, play the slots, or family recreational activities. Tour our vibrant downtown featuring great shopping and events. Taste our locally brewed, handcrafted beer and the many dining options. This is just a snapshot of what awaits you.
Visit McLean's Ales Brewery and choose from 6 different beers.
Discover more at hanover.ca.
If your active lifestyle is being held back by foot pain, Soul Science can help. Canadian certified podiatrist Jeff Walker and myself, Caitlin Witkowski, are ready to get you back on your feet. Since taking over from Melissa Bendo in 2015, Soul Science has been the custom foot orthotic experts within this area. We provide comfortable orthotics in days, not weeks, that last for years. Come see us today. Give us a call at 1-844-337-7653 or visit us on the web at soulscience.ca.
This is Hope from Whiteman Community TV. Join us on Saturday, September 30th from 9 a.m. till 3 p.m. for the second annual Blue Water Radiothon. The Radiothon will be broadcast live on Blue Water Radio and live on Whiteman TV Channel 1. This year's Radiothon will be in support of the Hanover, Walkerton, and Durham Hospital Foundations. This event is live, interactive, and it's your chance to directly support your local hospital. Local radio, local TV, for local healthcare. Save the date for the Radiothon, Saturday, September 30th, 9 a.m. till 3 p.m.
This is Dwayne Hackman from Aerodynamic Deck Cleaning. As a small business owner, I need to promote my business as cost-effectively as I can. You've heard me say, my business sucks, and that's just the way I like it. Now, thanks to Blue Water Radio, when homes and businesses in this area need their ductwork cleaned, they call me first. Blue Water Radio keeps my business's name out there. I didn't realize advertising on local radio was so effective and inexpensive. I now advertise my business on Blue Water Radio continually, and it really works. It's as simple as that. Advertising on Blue Water Radio gives me the best bang for my buck. Do I sound like a sucker to you?
This is Andy Mack for the Sounds of Scotland show. Join me every week for the Sounds of Scotland. Each week I'll be playing the very best in Scottish music, from the bothy ballads right through to the bagpipes, with some cheery chat and what's on in the Scottish scene, sharing a laugh and a half along the way. That's the Sounds of Scotland show with me, Andy Mack, Friday evenings from 7 to 9 and again on Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. right here on 91.3 FM Blue Water Radio. See you then.
Baseball Talk is brought to you by Lasting Memories Locker Room, downtown Hanover, where you will find incredible sports memorabilia, art supplies, and custom framing. Check them out online at lastingmemorieslockerroom.com.
The most music, 91.3.
Well, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening and watching Baseball Talk on 91.3 FM and on Whiteman TV. And yeah, you'll notice that our regular guests, Steve Fitzsimmons and Paul Hillier, are not here. I believe they're out trying out for the Winnipeg Goldeyes. A little bit of independent league action there. Having done their show, I guess reinvigorated some old dreams, and good luck to them out in Winnipeg. But since Paul couldn't be here, Scott's going to jump in with Paul's Fantasy Corner and tell us a little something about who's hot and who's not.
All right. Well, everyone knows that the Los Angeles Dodgers are doing well. Like, to have any starting pitching on the Dodgers, you can't go wrong. Jake Arrieta of Chicago. Last four starts, he's 3-1, ERA of 3.86, so with 24 Ks and 7 walks. Always a nice one. Once again, with the Dodgers, I like Alex Wood. He, in the last five, he's 4-1 with an ERA of 2.16, 19 Ks, 8 walks. He's 14-1 on the season, so if you don't have him, that would definitely be a 1-2 pickup. But the thing that I always like is the sleepers. You never know who to go with on a regular basis. And this one, I don't think a lot of people expected, was Dylan Bundy off of Baltimore. He's got, in his last five starts, he's 4-0 with a 4.25 with 33 Ks and only 8 walks. So that's one to look for. Hasn't lost in his last five. And then Yankees, you can never go wrong. But Luis Serrano, last five starts, he's 4-1 with a 3.09 with 36 Ks and 9 walks. Or Washington, Gio Gonzalez, his last four starts, he's 3-0 with a 2.63, 23 Ks, 7 walks. But in his last 13 innings, he's got 2 wins, 10 strikeouts, and has an ERA of 0.69. So those guys are always nice for sleepers to keep an eye on, for sure. That if you don't have them, at least pick them up, because you never know. Can't have too many starting pitchers.
Yeah, some great advice there from Paul's Fantasy Corner, who's hot and who's not. And another feature we didn't get to last week that we're getting back to this week is the Clarkives. And this week for Clarkives, we're going all the way back to 1962, which actually is before I was born, just in case there's any doubts about that. And for the local Clarkive, we're going to the Seaforth Times of July 19th of 1962. And it's one of those stories. It's kind of neat that if you get a chance to check it out on Twitter, at Andy_Clark, at Great County Guy, the full articles I'm going to talk about are there. But this one kind of reminds you that baseball should be for everyone, and has been for everyone a lot of the time. So the headline says, Winthrop continues winning streak, and it details two wins by a women's team from a rural village called Winthrop, which is near Clinton and Mitchell. And in, they had played some games against Londesboro and Clinton. And in this article, I'm not going to read it all for you, but to summarize some of it, some of those ladies could really swing a bat. And they also had really cool 1960s ladies' names, too. It was all like Ruth Ritchie had 3 home runs, a triple and a single, while pitcher Buzz Buchanan had a homer, a double, and 3 singles. The second game, the Winthrop Wingers went up. It was a high-scoring affair over Clinton. They won 17-15, and June Dolmage had 5 hits for Winthrop, while Faye Love and Irene Johnson had 4 hits each. And Sandra and Margie Merrill led the way from Clinton with 5 and 4 hits, respectively. So again, you can go onto Twitter and read that complete article if it catches your interest, or maybe June or Faye are listening and they can relive some memories checking out that old article. I got to tell you right now, though, once you read that article, you're going to have a craving to watch the Gina Davis, Tom Hanks movie, A League of Your Own.
Oh, yeah.
Great movie. And for our Major League Clarkive, it was an Associated Press piece written by Jim Becker, and it's taken from the Ottawa Citizen. And the headline says, it's up on the screen for the TV viewers, Target now 30 wins for hurler Drysdale. And what it's talking about there is that Los Angeles Dodgers pitcher Don Drysdale, at that point in the season, had already won 18 games. And he just needed to win 12 of his last 19 or so starts to be the first major leaguer to win 30 games in a season since Dizzy Dean had done it in 1934. Now, some of you are going to be running to Google to find out if he actually did it. So, spoiler alert, Don Drysdale ended up with 25 wins that year, but he pitched 314 innings. 314 and a third innings. Can you imagine that today?
Make them like that anymore.
Yeah, before the agents got a lot more involved and said, no, preserve the arms. So he had 19 complete games, and he won the Cy Young Award. And that article also mentions a bunch of other notes, such as Stan Musial breaking Mel Lott's career RBI mark. So a lot of cool stuff there. So yeah, you can check it out at Andy Clark, at Gray County Guys, the Twitter account. And next week, we're going to look at 1980. We'll find some gems from there. Cool. So other things we wanted to talk about, Scott, you were doing some research into a marketing initiative by Major League Baseball. They rolled it recently, putting some nicknames on jerseys.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what everyone thinks about the nicknames on the jerseys. Nay or yay, what do you think?
You know what? I don't have a problem with the nicknames on there. I think it's a marketing ploy. It's to get people excited about the game and get them involved in something different. I did get online earlier today and check out some of the jerseys, and they are ugly, for lack of a better term.
Are they like Houston Astros of like 1980 ugly?
Strange color combinations. In particular, I mean, go look at the Blue Jays. There's like a I don't want to call it turquoise or baby blue of some sort.
They remind me of like little league jerseys and whatnot. But I guess it's a marketing ploy to try and attract younger fans. Because just running some research on it, I guess there's only 7% of Major League Baseball's fan base is under 18 years old. So I guess they're really trying to bring some fun back to the game and whatnot. And like we spoke off air before, is a lot of people like certain players and whatnot. So I guess if they can get into it.
This is speculation on my point, but there's that series of sports documentaries, ESPN's 30 in 30.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know, they cover a huge amount of topics. But one that's been airing recently is one that looks back at the short-lived football league, the XFL, which was Vince McMahon had the idea of tackling, what's now America's game and basically taking the whole WWF, at the time it was called, marketing and having a football league based on it. And I caught a bit of this documentary, and what it was pointing out was, it was kind of doomed because there is that really schlocky WWE, WWF stuff that just wasn't going to fly in the conservative football world. But they also made a point of actually saying there were some really innovative ideas that got lost along the way, that maybe they were a little bit ahead of their time, or because they were trying to do like the sidelines, they're trying to get the coaches into trash talking and a lot of that garbage, that may be distracted from some of the cool ideas. Like in my opinion, they started the games, instead of having the coin toss for first possession, they used to, each team could pick like their fastest, quickest guy, and they had them, I don't know what it was, like 20 yards away, and they put the ball out, and basically they went, and whoever got the ball came up with it. The team got first possession, right? And that's kind of cool. It's better than flipping a coin, right? It's a little more exciting. But where I'm going with this is, one of their ideas is they encouraged the players to actually come up with nicknames and put them on their jerseys instead of their actual names. And the most famous one was, I believe his name was Rod Smart. He ended up having a pretty good football career after that. But he was the legendary He Hate Me, which ended up having huge, huge, huge. It was one of the most successful things out of the XFL was Rod Smart's He Hate Me jersey. So that documentary's been playing. I wonder if someone at MLB was like, that's an interesting idea. So let me take that to my bosses and see what we can do.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that. Maybe they just should have treaded water and not dove all in with the FXL kind of thing. But yeah, who knows? You got to try different things to attract different crowds and whatnot. And I think they're doing that, whether people like it or not. They like to do that, especially with the apparel wise, something new, some people want to buy it kind of thing. But
yeah, I'm a traditionalist when it comes to baseball, but I'm also, you know, nearly 40 years old. I think if you take a young kid and ask them, you know, what they think is cool, it's completely different than what we think is cool. So something like that, like you say, if it does appeal and get some younger people involved in the game, so be it. You know, I know they've also apparently juiced the baseballs up this year to see more home runs, but if it attracts fans, then so be it. Traditionalists like myself are going to say, I don't like that jersey or what have you, but it's about getting people interested in the game, and if you think that's the way to do it, then go with it.
It's that fine line, right? Because a big appeal of baseball is that legacy, that tradition, that passing on from father to son, you know, through the generations. So that keeping that tradition and that continuity, but at the same time, you also have to balance that with keeping it fresh without overdoing it. Since we're talking about this, here's another change they made this year. Not earth-shattering, but get your opinion on it. And I think we actually have a Twitter poll that maybe Adam in the booth there can throw on the screen for us. But what I'm getting at here was the intentional walk rule, where they've changed this year, where teams can just announce. And I was looking at the rules. They can actually do it partway through an at-bat, too, where instead of actually pitching out, they just say, no, take your base. I see you shaking your head over there already, and I'm of that mind. I thought about it this long and hard, and it's not really going to speed up the game. It's not going to be saving the pitcher's arms. So the other thing is, a big appeal of baseball is you have so much routine, but when you see things that are out of the unusual, it gives you something to talk about. And you know what? I've looked online, and there's an awful lot of examples where there's been wild pitches on pitchouts where the game swings, or maybe someone gets a little bit rattled and they don't pitch out as well as they should, and someone can lean out. And I know the Yankees catcher did recently, had an RBI sack fly, or there's been triples and such like that where, they don't get away from the plate enough and the guy steps out and cranks it, and it's all unexpected. And I'm like, I know it doesn't happen all the time, but it's exciting, it's fun, and the possibility that it might happen is kind of neat. So what's your thoughts on the intentional walk rule there, Scott?
I don't know. I don't think it's going to quicken the game by any means. That, I don't know. I like to see it in there. Like, where do you stop kind of thing? Because I know when you were talking, it just clicked in my head that they were on the thought process of the home run trot, of hitting the home run, but just walking to the dugout after you hit the home run. So kind of where is it going to stop kind of thing? But I think that it still should be there.
Yeah, maybe they should have a designated, instead of like a, you know, the on-deck circle, have like the designated celebration circle, right? If you hit a home run, you're given, and it's like an Oscar speech. You got 30 seconds, bust your move, make your best move right there, and then you're off.
Yeah,
right?
Edwin can fly his parrot in there or whatever.
He could just stand still. And
I've read a few articles of...
It would be like Coco Beware, since we're talking about wrestling. Sorry, I cut you off there, Scott.
No, that's all right. That's all right. I just... where do you stop with... like, baseball is tradition, and...
Intentional walks are so rare. I mean, they literally did not slow the game down for as many times as you saw it, and you hit it on the head. How many times did you see a wild pitch or a base get stolen because somebody wasn't paying attention while that intentional walk was going on? That's exciting. That brings something to the game. If they want to save time, what they should be doing on these video replays where the manager gets to come out of the dugout and stand there for 15 seconds and tell the umpire, hey, wait a second, because my guy in the dugout's looking at the video. Well, no, you know, you want to speed things up. As soon as you step out of the dugout to argue a call, that's a challenge. Right, speed the game up that way.
Getting
the pitchers moving and this kind of thing. But
if you want to, for the viewers that are listening, our poll said 46% did not like the new pitch rule. 38% actually said yes, though. So it's pretty close.
It is pretty split.
Pretty close. Yeah.
Now we're getting down on time here, so I'm going to have to wrap it up. A quick shout out to the Palmerston Imperials. Whiteman TV is going to air these. They won the under 14 fast pitch championship over the weekend. It was great ball. It was a lot of fun. Yours truly got to call the action and enjoyed it greatly. And next week we have Jay Bell coming on in to talk to us on Baseball Talk. So for Ryan Enright, Scott Dietrich, Adam Oliveira in the booth, and I'm Andy Clark. Thank you for listening to Baseball Talk.